So if you were to just pull out your phone right now and scroll through your camera roll, I would bet actual money that you have dozens or, maybe hundreds of pictures of pets on there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
Yeah.
we are completely obsessed with capturing them.
Yeah.
The digital footprint of the modern pet is just staggering right now.
Yeah, totally. You've got dogs, cats, your friends' pets, probably even random animals you just saw on the street and thought, oh, that's cute.
Right, exactly.
But there is this massive gap, right, between just capturing an image of an animal and actually capturing its soul. Like, we snap these photos constantly, but how often do we really get beyond that cute surface level?
Barely ever, honestly.
Right, how often do we actually record what an animal genuinely means to a home, their true presence?
Well, doing that requires a completely different kind of documentation. I mean,
Yeah.
it's the difference between a quick disposable snapshot you just throw up on a social media feed and a true portrait,
Sure.
something that actually anchors a physical space.
And that difference, that exact gap, is what we're getting into in today's deep dive. We are super thrilled to have you with us today because we've got a really fascinating stack of source material to go through.
Yeah, it's incredibly rare to get this kind of access. We're looking at the behind-the-scenes technical log, plus the private creative diary of the artist Jairo Duque.
Right. Which means we aren't just looking at a finished painting hanging on some pristine white wall. We are literally reading his personal notes, his technical specs, his internal doubts, his daily habits.
It's basically a real-time look into how raw observation turns into fine art.
Exactly. And specifically, we are focusing on a watercolor piece of his called Frida. It's part of this broader project he calls Trastio, Pintura Artística.
And trastio in Spanish roughly translates to moving or shifting, like transferring households.
Which makes perfect sense here because Duke is basically transferring the immense emotional weight of this pet from real life directly onto paper. So, our mission for you today is to deconstruct Duke's entire philosophy.
We really want to trace that creative evolution from simply observing a pet in a living room all the way to an international gallery exhibition.
Yeah, and by the end of this, you listening right now, you are going to have the critical tools to instantly spot emotional depth versus superficiality the next time you look at modern portraiture. Okay, let's unpack this.
Sounds good.
Starting with the artist's mindset. Because before we can even understand the physical paint on the paper, we really have to understand Duke's radical rejection of how we typically interact with animals.
Right, because in his notes, he explicitly rejects what he calls sentimental idealization.
The greeting card version, basically.
Exactly. He is entirely against that greeting card version of a pet portrait. He firmly believes that forcing an animal into a human narrative, well, it completely cheapens the real bond we share with them.
Which, I mean, that goes completely against our modern instincts. We have this strong biological reflex to humanize everything around us.
Well, absolutely.
We are constantly trying to force animals to act like little humans. It's like, when you're shaking a treat behind your smartphone just to force a fake, wide-eyed, smiling reaction for the camera?
Right, like we need them to perform for us just to validate our own care for them.
Yes.
But we do that because, biologically speaking, anthropomorphization is one of our oldest social survival tools. Like, we're literally wired to look for human facial expressions.
Right.
We subconsciously believe that if the animal appears to smile, or if it mimics our expressions, it means they understand us. But Duke argues that when you force an animal to pose or smile, you're just erasing its true nature.
You're just turning the animal into a mirror of yourself.
Exactly. Instead of actually observing the living, breathing creature for what it is, in his creator's diary, he focuses on something he calls the animal's silent mode of accompanying.
Silent mode of accompanying. I love that phrasing.
Yeah, and there's a specific note he wrote about this dog, Frida, where he states that she, quote, does not pose, it habits.
Okay, but I actually have to push back on that idea for a second.
Sure, go ahead.
Because we know Frida is a French bulldog, right? And this painting is an homage to her role in the Long family down in Miami.
Right, they're the subject.
So if a family commissions or inspires a portrait of their beloved dog, wouldn't they inherently want a happy, playful, energetic picture? Like, why would an artist consciously choose to paint a moment where the dog is just lying down, looking away, and blatantly ignoring everyone in the room?
Well, it comes down to a concept Duke refers to as animal dignity.
Animal dignity.
Yeah, he believes a true, deep bond in a household doesn't actually require constant entertainment. Think about your own home. The animal isn't a performing ornament.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's true.
It isn't a toy designed to constantly stimulate you.
Yeah.
The animal is this structural, emotional anchor in that space. Its sheer, quiet presence is what holds the atmosphere of the house together.
Right. So by painting Frida just resting, just habituating in her space without needing to acknowledge the viewer at all, he is preserving that inherent dignity.
Precisely. So it's not about capturing what the dog looks like when it's playing fetch. It's about capturing what the dog's presence feels like in the quietest, most ordinary moments of, say, a random Tuesday afternoon.
He's painting the bond itself.
Yes. He isn't painting a biological inventory of a French bulldog's spots. He is painting the absolute gravity of her companionship.
But, you know, conceptualizing something that poetic is really only a fraction of the battle. The real challenge is translating that abstract emotional anchor into a physical reality on paper.
Oh, definitely. And the physical process is fascinating.
Right, because to do that, you actually need distance. I mean, you cannot capture that quiet dignity if you are sitting right in the middle of a chaotic family living room in Miami with the TV blaring and phones ringing everywhere.
No, you absolutely can't.
The physical space where art is processed really dictates the outcome. So the raw subject material, Frida and the Long family, they are deeply rooted in Miami, Florida, but the artwork wasn't created there at all.
Right. The technical specs in his log reveal this really vital geographical shift. The piece was actually executed in July 2023 in Whittier, California.
All the way across the country. And that physical separation is really the only way this works. Whittier becomes his creative bunker.
This laboratory, essentially.
Exactly. By separating himself from the day-to-day domestic environment of the subject, Du can filter out the literal noise of Miami. He just strips away all those distractions until only the structural emotional truth of the dog remains.
Yeah, that isolation in Whittier allows him to apply his disciplined daily habits. He takes those raw memories and reference photos from Miami, retreats to his studio in California, and initiates this almost alchemical process.
The studio gives him the quiet required to turn basic observation into deep interpretation.
And, you know, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it demonstrates the sheer power of a universal visual language.
Oh, yeah, because look at where the painting ended up.
Right. You have this highly specific, deeply intimate bond belonging to one single family in Miami. It is processed and distilled in this quiet studio in California. And then it is instantly understood, felt, and validated by curators and viewers in Switzerland.
Right, because it traveled to the Art Boxy Thompson Gallery in Zug, Switzerland, in that very same month, July 2023.
Exactly. When you capture a fundamental truth about domestic companionship and you execute it with the right technique, it effortlessly transcends borders and cultures.
But building that universal language isn't just about high-minded thinking. Like, Duke's laboratory in Whittier is a place where he has to make incredibly specific, highly physical choices.
The materials matter just as much as the concept.
They really do. And here's where it gets really interesting. The process of capturing Frida's dignity actually begins before he even opens a single tube of paint, because the very first choice he makes is the paper itself.
Right. The foundation basically dictates everything that follows. According to the technical log, Duke used Daniel Smith watercolors on Arch's cold-pressed, heavy-grain paper.
And the weight of this paper is just astounding. It's 640 grams.
That is massive.
Yeah, to give you some real-world perspective on that number, if you pull a normal sheet of printer paper out of your desk right now, that weighs about 75 grams.
Right, it's flimsy.
Exactly. And even standard, high-quality watercolor paper usually hovers around 300 grams. So this 640-gram paper is incredibly dense. It's practically a physical slab.
It's basically cardboard.
Right. Painting on something this heavy is like trying to paint a soft, delicate subject onto a piece of rustic construction cardboard.
Which completely defies conventional logic for pet portraiture.
Yeah.
I mean, typically, if someone wants to paint soft, delicate dog fur, they reach for smooth, silky, hot-pressed paper.
Because they want the brush to just glide perfectly over the surface.
Exactly. They want that slippery, hyper-polished, almost artificial look that mimics a sharp photograph.
But Duke actively fights against that slickness.
He does. He actively fights it by choosing this heavy, aggressive grain. That heavy grain means the surface of the paper is literally this microscopic landscape of mountains and valleys.
So when he applies the watercolor, the paper physically resists the brush.
Right. The bristles skip over the valleys and catch on the peaks, creating what Duke calls color drags. The paint settles unevenly, leaving these highly visible, textured marks.
Which grounds the painting in reality. And conceptually, a 640-gram paper matches the subject flawlessly. Like, if you've ever held a French bulldog, you know they are compact, dense, and surprisingly heavy little animals.
Very dense.
Yeah, they carry a lot of physical gravity. So by choosing this massive paper, Duke ensures that the physical foundation of the painting literally supports the physical and conceptual weight of the dog.
The paper itself is doing half the storytelling before the color even hits it.
It's amazing.
But once that heavy physical foundation is laid, he has to actually build the emotional space around the dog. He has to contextualize her. And the way he uses color theory to achieve this is brilliant. It essentially serves as emotional architecture.
Oh, for sure. The moment you look at the composition, you are just hit with this brutal thermal contrast.
Right.
The entire background is dominated by incredibly cold tones. We are talking deep blues and transparent layers of violet.
And optically speaking, cold colors visually recede.
They push back away from the viewer's eye.
Exactly, creating a sense of distance and depth. Duke leverages these cold, abstract, undefined blues to aggressively push the background away. Symbolically, this cold void represents the noise, the uncertainty, and the chaos of the outside world.
It's everything that exists outside the safe doors of the Long family's home.
Exactly.
And sitting squarely in the middle of that cold, retreating void is Frida. But she and her resting spot are painted in warm earth tones and ochres.
And just as cold colors recede, warm colors visually jump forward toward the eye.
So Frida literally emerges out of the cold background toward you. This warmth is the literal visual representation of home. It turns that specific spot where she is resting into a sanctuary.
Yeah, and notice how he builds that space too. He deliberately eliminates all the domestic furniture.
Oh, right. There are no chair legs, no baseboards, no doors to ground you in a literal physical room.
By stripping away the literal architecture of the house, he turns the scene into a purely mental and emotional territory. It's no longer just a physical room in Miami. It's a space where memory and affection overlap.
And to create that deep, receding background, Duke didn't just, you know, slap down a flat coat of blue paint. I was looking through his notes, and he relies heavily on a technique called veladuras.
Right, which are essentially glazes.
Yeah, glazes.
The glazing technique is crucial here. A veladura involves applying a very diluted, almost completely transparent layer of paint over a previous layer that has already dried completely.
Right. So rather than just mixing blue and purple on a palette to make a flat, boring block of color, he is building the background in these sheer individual layers.
It functions exactly like a stained glass window.
Right. Where the light bounces through.
Yeah. The ambient light in the gallery enters the painting, passes through those transparent layers of violet and blue, hits the white paper underneath, and then bounces back to your eye. It gives the background this luminous, deep, almost vibrating quality.
And that vibration gives the cold void a sense of life rather than just being a dead backdrop.
Exactly. But establishing that deeply colored, vibrating background creates a massive technical hurdle.
Oh, because of the dog's fur.
Right. The subject, Frida, is a mostly white dog. So how do you paint a white dog in the center of all this intense layered color without using white paint?
That is the ultimate watercolor magic trick, isn't it? Because in traditional pure watercolor, opaque white paint doesn't exist. You don't get to paint the light, you actually have to preserve it.
Right, the white of the image is simply the bare, unpainted paper shining through.
Which forces the artist to sculpt entirely with shadows, because you can't just leave a blank, dog-shaped hole in the middle of the paper and expect the viewer to somehow understand it as a three-dimensional living creature.
You just see a cutout.
Yeah.
So Duke achieves this volume using what he calls modulated grays.
Modulated grays.
Yes. He doesn't just mix a flat dead gray to represent the shadows in Frida's white fur. These shadows are incredibly complex ecosystems of color. They contain subtle, icy blue hints in their deepest recesses and then warm orange edges where they transition into the light.
It's exactly like carving marble.
That's a perfect way to visualize it.
Like instead of taking a chisel and chipping away physical stone, the artist is using a brush to subtract light and thereby building the form.
Exactly.
If he paints a deeply nuanced cool gray shadow right under the dog's chin, your brain instantly reads the unpainted blank paper just above that shadow as a 3D snout catching the light.
By placing these modulated grays around the muscles and folds of the dog, he tricks your brain into filling in the blanks.
Mm.
You perceive a solid, heavy body, even though you're mostly staring at bare paper.
It's brilliant. And he applies that exact same level of nuance to the darkest areas of the painting as well. Like, Frida has these distinct black patches on her head.
Right. And the instinct for an amateur painter would be to grab a tube of black paint and just fill in those shapes solidly.
Like staying inside the lines of a coloring book.
Exactly.
But if he did that, those patches would look like giant black stickers just slapped onto the paper. Flat black absorbs all the light, so it is visually dead. It would completely kill the integration of the whole piece.
To avoid that deadness, Duke ensures that even those dark patches contain internal tonal variations. There are hidden temperatures, subtle warm and cool tones, breathing inside the black.
So it's not just black?
No, not at all. This allows the dark shapes to integrate seamlessly. The animal belongs completely to its surrounding environment, rather than feeling like a silhouette cut out of a magazine.
You know, when you look at all this masterful technique, the 640-gram paper, the stained glass glazes, the brutal thermal contrast, the meticulously sculpted shadows, and you combine all of that with the fact that it was exhibited in an international gallery in Switzerland, it is so easy to assume the story ends in total triumph.
Because we constantly perpetuate the myth of the flawless genius.
Right.
We love to imagine the artist stepping back from the finished canvas, dropping his brush, and declaring, you know, it is perfect. I have made no mistakes.
Right. But the final, most crucial piece of identifying real depth in art, and this is that toolkit we promised you earlier, is recognizing the creator's vulnerability.
Absolutely.
Duke's personal diary doesn't read like a victory lap at all. It actually includes a brutal self-critique of this very painting.
It is arguably the most illuminating part of the source material.
Hmm.
He writes extensively about what he wishes he had done differently. Specifically, he notes a deep regret that he didn't risk more in dissolving the contours between the dog and the cold blue background.
He wants to use a wet-on-wet technique, right?
Yes.
Which means applying wet pigment to paper that is already soaked with water. But you have to think about the physics of that on 640-gram heavy grain paper.
It's risky.
Really risky. Those microscopic mountains and valleys we talked about are now completely flooded. When you drop wet paint into that, the water carries the pigment uncontrollably across the surface. It bleeds.
Right.
So why on earth would he want to risk turning this beautifully sculpted three-dimensional dog into a blurry puddle?
Because the narrative demands it.
Ah.
Think about it. If you successfully execute that wet-on-wet bleed, you dissolve the hard visual barrier between the subject and its space. Duke felt that if he had blurred that edge just a bit more, allowing the warm fur to bleed directly into the cold background, Frida would have merged perfectly with her resting space.
Oh, wow. It would have maximized that core philosophical concept of habituating.
Exactly. The dog in the home would visually become one continuous, inseparable entity.
That's fascinating. And he also critiqued his execution of the white fur. He noted that he could have pushed for even more extreme temperature variations in those modulated grays.
Right.
He wondered if adding more icy blues or subtle oranges into the shadows would have made the volume feel even richer and heavier.
Which, you know, this raises an important question about how we fundamentally view finished art. We tend to walk into galleries and view paintings as final, definitive statements perfectly frozen in time.
Like they're indisputable.
Right. But for Duke, this painting wasn't a rigid test to prove his technical perfection to the world. It was a bridge constructed to honor a real living relationship.
And because a relationship is complex, messy, and constantly evolving, the art itself is an ongoing dialogue.
Yes. It is full of risks, internal doubts, and that lingering desire to express that affection just a little bit better the next time.
So what does this all mean for you? Well, it means you now possess the toolkit to read the hidden language of portraiture. You don't have to just scroll past an image or, you know, passively accept what a gallery tells you is good.
You finally have the vocabulary to look beneath the surface.
Exactly. The next time you are wandering through a gallery or even just looking at art online, you won't just glance at a piece and say, oh, that's pretty. You are going to look closer.
Much closer.
You are going to look for the physical weight of the paper or the canvas and ask yourself why the artist needed that specific gravity. You're going to look for the push and pull of cold backgrounds versus warm subjects and realize how the artist is subtly manipulating your sense of safety and space.
And most importantly, you're going to look for the vulnerability hidden in the brushstrokes.
Right. You will look for the places where the artist took a massive risk, like letting a contour bleed out of control just to capture a fleeting feeling, even if it meant risking the technical perfection of the entire image.
You will instantly be able to spot the difference between a superficial image designed simply to entertain you and a deep, thoughtful piece of emotional architecture meant to document a true bond.
Which brings us right back to where we started today. We talked about scrolling through endless pictures of pets, performing for the camera, waiting for that bright manufactured smile.
Right.
But building on Gyro Duke's idea of capturing a silent mode of accompanying, I want to leave you with a thought to mull over today.
It's a really profound challenge regarding observation in your own life.
What silent, deeply profound details of your own daily life or, you know, the people and the pets that you share your home with, are you completely ignoring right now because you have mistakenly labeled them as just too ordinary?
That's a great question.
What would a portrait of your own silent moments look like if you finally stopped waiting for life to perform for you?
That is the real emotional weight Duke asks us to carry forward.
It really is. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We will catch you on the next one.